certain types of sin. So, what is sin? Sin is an attitude and an action contrary to God's plan and God's purpose for our lives. Sin is missing the mark of God's perfection. You see, only God is perfect, and we fall short of that. So, you know, sin is not something that is decided by a group. It seems like so many things these days are decided by consensus or by polls or by groups. Sin is just kind of black and white. It's decided by God. God doesn't conduct a poll to get opinions on what sin is. He measures sin against His soul, His perfect and holy presence and His righteous character. So, who is it that sins? In Romans 3:10 through 12, it teaches us that, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. So don't get confused. That means none. That's not ambiguous there. There is none that understandeth. Those of us who think we've got a deep understanding, maybe not so much. You know, Paul said we look through a glass darkly. There is none that seeketh after God. Really. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good. No, not one. If you turn us loose for long enough, we're going to figure out a way to not do good. If we set out in a direction somewhere between here and our destiny, we're going to figure out a way to not do good. So, the Bible talks about seven sins. Seven deadly sins is what they're kind of nicknamed over in Proverbs 6. And you can go ahead and turn to that if you will. Proverbs 6, verse 16. Proverbs 6, 16, it says, "These six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination to Him." Verse 17, a proud look, that's sin number one. A lying tongue, that's number two. And hands that shed innocent blood, that's number three. Verse 18, and heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, that's number four. Feet that be swift in running to mischief, that'd be five. Verse 19, and a false witness that speaketh lies, that's six. And he that soweth discord among brethren. Some of those kind of started overlapping a little bit in there. Right? Heart that deviseth wicked, and feet that, and he that soweth discord, a lying tongue, and a false witness that speaketh lies. And the first one was a proud look. And that's where I want to focus our energy on tonight is the proud look or the pride, the sin of pride, or being prideful. Are we guilty of any of these seven that I named? I'd say most of us are to various degrees. And, you know, these are referred to as the seven deadly sins because I'll say they act as a virus on our lives. And some viruses, you see, kind of hide in your system. Y'all ever heard of that? They go dormant and they'll hide for a minute or for years. But they're always there, ready to pounce in a moment of weakness. You get a little stressed or you get in a situation where your defenses are down. That virus will come up and start attacking. That's the same as these sins here. They kind of live in our system. They're part of our flesh. It's part of our makeup. It's part of who we are. And we start letting ourselves become vulnerable. Those sins come up and start to attack us. And if we let them take enough of a hold, they'll take us all the way down. They'll take us all the way out of the game. They take us all the way out of our lives and destroy that which God has for us. So, according to the Bible, there are two basic ways we can sin. Just in general terms, there's two basic ways. And I'd have you think about this for a minute. There's the sin of commission. That's an active, willfulness decision to go do something that's against God's will. To go do something that serves the god of our bellies, or the wickedness of our purposes as opposed to God's purpose and the rules that God has set for us. And the second way we can sin is the sin of omission. So you got the sin of commission, which is active, and you have the sin of omission. The sin of omission is an activity we could have, would have, or should have done. It's something that God would have us do that we're not going to do. Out of fear, out of laziness, out of whatever it is that's holding us back. Maybe out of selfishness, most likely out of some kind of pride. Something's holding us back from doing what God has asked us to do, told us to do, and purposed us to do. And when we're not doing those things that God purposed us to do, that's a sin of omission. It's kind of like, no, I didn't lie, I just didn't share the information. That's kind of a sin of omission. No, I didn't hurt anybody, but I didn't help anybody either. Well, God said, you need to be helping these people. You need to be helping somebody. Well, God gave me a talent, but I decided not to use it. Yeah, I didn't hurt. I wasn't actively going out and hurting anybody, but I'm hurting somebody by not fulfilling the purpose that God has for me with that talent. Augustine said, sin has two causes. Either from seeing what we ought to do, either from not seeing what we ought to do or from not doing what we see needs to be done. So he's talking about those sins of commission and omission. So pride, I would say, is the worst and the most prevalent of the seven deadly sins, because it's either the source or the chief component of all other sins. Pride is the instigator of most sins. So the dictionary defines pride as a high or inordinate opinion of one's own dignity, of one's own importance, of one's own merit, or one's own superiority. Sometimes we describe pride as egotistical, arrogant, selfish, vain, conceited, boastful, and one of my favorites, big-headed. Have any of y'all ever been accused of any of those? Me too. And been guilty of all of those. So over in the book of Luke, if you will turn, that's going to be our primary text this evening. Book of Luke, chapter 18. Luke 18, verse 9. So we're talking about pride here, and we're focusing in on the pridefulness and the act of being prideful. So in Luke chapter 18, verse 9, it says, "And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others." Verse 10, "Two men went up into the temple to pray. One a Pharisee and the other a publican." Okay, so you got two men here. The Pharisee is a religious person. This is someone who knows the law, teaches the law. They know the rules, okay? The publican is another word for a tax collector in this day. Not the most liked person. Does anybody in here work for the IRS? You wouldn't admit it if you did, would you? You'd be like, no, I'm just going to keep that private about myself. But this tax collector, and these guys were a little more hands-on back in those days, collecting taxes. It was kind of like a door-to-door. So you think you had to get a letter in the mail from Uncle Sam, having somebody actually walk up to your door that lives in your community, people might start disliking that person pretty quick. So this tax collector. Now in verse 11, "The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, 'God, I thank thee that I am not as other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican, you know, kind of over here beside me. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess.' And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner.' So Jesus said, 'And I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted.'" That's a lesson for all of us. If we build ourselves up, there's a fall coming. If we can humble ourselves up down, God can use that situation to lift us up. So humility thinks of others. Pride is all about me, myself, and I. But humility thinks of others. Pride thinks of self. Who did Jesus think of while he was here? Others. The perfect picture of humility. So pride is a beast. It goads us into trying to make a name for ourselves in the headlines of the world. C.S. Lewis, I know you guys probably have heard of him. He wrote Mere Christianity, among other things. He said, "For pride is a spiritual cancer. It eats up the very possibility of love, contentment, or even common sense." If we're eating up with pride, if we're just eating up with ourselves, we can't receive love from others and give love to others. We can't find contentment. You know, the richest people in the world and the most famous people in the world, the people who have kind of the world by the tail, they seek contentment so much. You can think back to, you know, various artists or rock stars or folks in pop culture. You know, some of in my generation and I guess some of y'all's generation, let's go back all the way back to Elvis. That was a long time ago, right? Really long time ago. That make anybody mad? So Elvis was in a situation where he was, you know, I mean, he was doing like 160 concerts in a year. I mean, he was doing two and three concerts a week, and he was flat out unhealthy and had no peace. And he was taking medicine to get up, medicine to lay down. He was abusing himself, and he was sick, and he had no contentment. Fast forward to Michael Jackson. You got the king of rock. Now you go to the king of pop. Got the world by the tail. Died trying to get sleep. Taking medicine to get sleep. Trying to get rest. Trying to find contentment. At the hand of a doctor. And then you go a little bit further into the future and you find Prince. And same deal. Taking medicine, taking pills to get rest, to settle down. So, you know, it's not just folks that are in that kind of the world that are entertainers. It's the people who are around us. It's the people who are in our lives, and sometimes it's even us. Things get stressful. This week's been a stressful week for me. I've been feeling pressure this week. And it's like, I was sitting by a guy this morning. He's like, "You won't believe what I just dealt with this morning." He's another one of the bosses, and I said, "I don't even want to know." He said, "There's not enough money." He said, "There is not enough money for me to keep doing this every day." I said, "Okay, well, but you know, it's contentment, it's rest, it's peace." So look at the Pharisee's attitude. He wasn't as bad as a sinner as others. He was more spiritual because he was pious and religious. He took pride in the fact that he gave at the altar. He gave his tithe. He's not doing anybody a favor by giving his tithe. That's a basic requirement. That's a basic show of commitment to God, is to give that first tenth. Something to brag about. You know, that's God. God's not impressed with that. Certainly not impressed about it. If we're impressed by it, if we're impressed at ourselves, I'm sure God's not impressed by it. The truth is, he knew how to put on a better show, and he thought, you know, he could show God why God needed and deserved him. I mean, he got up to make a show in that parable. So self-righteous people think their goodness can get them into heaven and meet with God's approval. They see heaven as a place with a pecking order. And the Bible says that God is no respecter of persons. Heaven doesn't have a pecking order. There's no pecking order around here. God honors the clinking of the widow's tithe as much as he honors the thunk all these CEOs tithe. And if given with the right spirit, the tinkling of the widow's tithe means a whole lot more. It's a lot sweeter on his ears. Because quite frankly, it's all his anyway. None of us can hold on to anything that God's pulling at. It'll slip right out of our hands in a second. If God wants it, he can snatch it. Ephesians 2, 8 and 9 says, "For by grace are you saved through faith, and not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast." I'm like Brother Mike, I don't know who's saved in here. Right now I know two, me and Brother Mike. If anybody else wants to step up, we'll let you in the club. But we can't be sure, can we? But I can guarantee you everybody in here who is saved didn't do anything to get it. Nobody in here worked. Nobody in here lifted anything. Nobody in here moved anything. Nobody in here gave anything. Nobody in here was talented enough or good enough. So we have difficulty giving up the worship of ourselves to honor God. A lot of times we think we deserve praise. And until we understand we have no righteousness on our own and we're just sinners saved by grace, we'll continue that line of thinking. You're no better than I am, and I am no better than you are. We are all sinners in need of a Savior. Romans 3:23 says, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." So the Pharisee in the parable said, "Look at me. I have no need of anyone else. I can do it myself." And that view holds the me, myself, and I mentality, that I'm strong enough and I can count on me to get done when I need to get done. That's a prideful thought. We sometimes think that's independence, but it's really pride, because all of us need somebody. All of us need somebody. Matter of fact, I picked up a little story here I want to read to you guys. A CEO of a Fortune 500 company noticed his wife talking with a gas station attendant when they stopped to get gas. Come to find out, she used to date him in high school. So when she got back in the car, he said, "You know, I bet I know what you were thinking when you were talking to your old boyfriend there. You were thinking, I'm glad I married you instead of him, because or else I'd be the wife of a gas station attendant." And without missing a beat, she said, "No, actually, I was thinking if I'd married him instead of you, he'd be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and you'd be a gas station attendant." Yeah. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Miss Renee got that one real good. We are not just ourselves, are we? We are the people that we join with, and we are built up by the people that we put around us. And the people we have around us, especially a spouse, but our friends and the people we choose to have part of our lives, will either build us up or they'll break us down. They'll either take or they'll give. I got a buddy at work. He's an engineer, and he just retired. He was one of my mentors. And he said, "Randy, there are people who are exothermic and they are endothermic." I'm like, "Oh no, where are we going here?" So that's just physics. He said, "They either take energy or they give energy. Be somebody that gives energy." I was like, "Okay. Thank you for explaining." But there are people in our lives, and a lot of times we are connected with dysfunction in our lives. Anybody got dysfunction in their families? Like, you know, somewhere, probably distant family. Nobody in here should really admit that, because this is a small town. Sometimes that dysfunction tries to get on you and tries to suck you in and tries to pull you into a place where next thing you know, you got drama. You got stuff going on in your house and you ain't even got nothing to do with it, but it's all in your world. Sometimes people build us up and sometimes people bring us down. And I'm not giving any advice, because I'm not smart enough to tell anybody what to do. But all I know is if you let dysfunction in, it's not long before you're dysfunctional. Sometimes you got to put barriers up. Sometimes you got to define barriers very clearly if you want to stay where you need to be. So pride will help us, will keep us from getting help from others. Anybody in here that thinks they're an island and they think they do things themselves, you're probably missing something. So I got another little story. So a man brought his boss home from dinner. The boss was brash and arrogant. The little boy of the family stared at the boss for most of the evening but didn't say anything. The boss asked the boy, he said, "Why do you keep looking at me like that, son?" And the boy answered, "Well, my daddy said you were a self-made man." The boss beamed proudly and said, and admitted, he said, "Yes, I am. I am a self-made man." And the boy looked at him and said, "Well, if you're a self-made man, why did you make yourself like that?" We've all got stuff that we all sometimes think we're hotshot. But if we would just really ask people, because everybody knows it, y'all. Everybody knows our stuff. And everybody's talking about our stuff. They're just not telling us. But if we really asked, they'd tell us. And we'd be surprised who we really are. Who we're really viewed as. That's what we call, "What feedback do you have for me?" Be careful when you ask that question, because you might get some. So pride prevents us from helping others also. Sometimes pride can make us think that we're too good to get our hands dirty. Now, a ministry like this and a church like this, and I'm not the pastor, very clearly, but it requires work. And it requires things being moved, things being done. It requires people being in places. It requires work. We can't be too prideful to get our hands dirty. I'll leave that there. So it's all about me when it comes to pride. Pride is a worship of me. Center of the universe. You know, forget the sun. It all revolves around me. Anybody know anybody like that? Anybody ever been somebody like that? I got a buddy at work. It's a long-standing joke, and he knows it, and we've told him, and sometimes he even says it himself, that the universe revolves around him. And matter of fact, one time, independently, I saw somebody else going. As he was talking, they were just doing this right here. And he finally said, "What? Oh, I was just watching the universe revolve around you." Just entitled. What can you do for me? So the reason the Pharisee stood up in the first place was to draw attention to himself. You see, praying openly about how great we are in public like that, God is not pleased with that. Prideful people don't like to share the limelight. Sometimes we can turn the limelight over to somebody else. It'd be all right. It's all right to let other people have a little bit of sunshine every now and then. You know what? It'll be just fine. The wicked don't care about the Lord. In our pride, we think God doesn't matter. In our pride, we think God doesn't matter. So in Proverbs 21:4, it says, "A high look and a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked is sin." So pride is a distinguishing mark of the wicked. That's what this verse says to me. "A high look and a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked is sin." Pride is what got Lucifer. Pride is what started this whole mess. See, Lucifer, he had near perfection, beauty in heaven. He was the ultimate expression of divine beauty and the capstone of God's creation in heaven. He was number two. Number one among the angels, number two, in control there. And it's amazing when people get lifted up to a high place, how corrupted they can become. Satan was no different. He was on the mountain of God in an ultimate position of authority. But he fell. So I'll just have you consider this. We are never more like Satan than when we're prideful. Pride defined Satan's fall. Pride will define our fall. Every major mistake man has ever made has been rooted in pride. Think of Adam and Eve. It was because of pride. They wanted to be like God. They wanted the knowledge of God. Think of Babel. They said they'll stay together and build something great in their image. To show God how good they are, they were going to build a tower that touches heaven. Pride. Pride brings destruction. Proverbs 16:18 says, "Pride goeth before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall." First pride, then a crash. The bigger the ego, the harder the fall. But humility, it brings honor. Proverbs 18:12 says, "Before destruction, the heart of man is haughty, and before honor is humility." So that tells me that the tax collector in Luke 18, he had a proper perspective on his life and on his sinfulness. He had humility, and he understood that he wasn't self-righteous or self-sufficient, so he had no reason to be self-centered. That humility is something God can use, and it's something God can bless. He knew he needed help, and he was broken. The truth is, we all need help. We got to be submissive to God and know who's in charge. We got to be humble. We got to be humble in comparison to God. So many times we try to take control of our lives and we don't submit to God. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, "For in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." So I got one more little story snippet here to illustrate that point. A lion who wanted every animal in the jungle to know he was king. So he went from animal to animal soliciting their respect. He went to a bear and roared, "Who is the king of the jungle?" The bear said, "Well, you are, of course." He went to the tiger and roared, "Who is the king of the jungle?" The tiger said, "Well, everyone knows you're the king." Then he ran into an elephant and roared, "Who is the king of the jungle?" Well, the elephant reached down, grabbed the lion with his trunk, whirled him around in the air and slammed him on the ground, bounced him off a few trees and dunked him in the river and threw him on the shore. Dazed and bloodied and bruised, the lion got up and said, "Well, listen, if you don't know the answer, you don't have to be mean about it." The key to pride is found in understanding who's really in charge. If we understand that God's really in charge, He won't have to bounce us off trees and dunk us in the river and throw us on the bank bloodied so that we can figure out that He's in charge. I've been there. Like they say in the country, you look like you've been pulled through a knothole. God's pulled me through a knothole or two or three to show me that He can wring me out if He needs to. Our behavior and attitudes are altered when we know who's in control. There's humility when we know who's in control. There's no need to push ourselves to the front of the line when we know God's going to give us what's ours. There's no need to trip other people on the way to get what's theirs, or trip them up when we know that God's going to take care of us because He's in control. There's no need to scrape and fight and lie and cheat and steal because God's got what's ours ready for us. All we have to do is be submissive to Him and be in His will. And He takes all things are added to us when we put ourselves in that situation. Ultimately, we need to realize that God's in charge and we are His creation. That's all I have. Thank you.